Well, I appreciate another opportunity to be here, and it was said that we appreciate the dry building, and you know, this is my second hurricane meeting of the year. I was at East Albertville, Alabama, in a meeting about a month ago, I guess, whenever it was, when Hurricane Irma was working its way up, and on Monday night, we had rain. I mean, it wasn't super high wind, 25 to 30. The wind, the rain was blowing straight sideways. The roof started leaking, and they had drips, one right there, one right there. And I felt like I was trapped, pinned in. You know, they had trash cans collecting water. So that was an interesting experience. But so far, I don't see any water here, so that's a good thing. But I do appreciate you getting out and being here this morning. And Michael told me, he said, you're trying to limit this first period to an hour and a half. So was it an hour and a half you told me? No, we won't be anything like that. But I do appreciate this opportunity. And I want to begin with a question. What do Adam and Eve, Joseph, Tamar, Aaron, Elijah, the immoral woman of Proverbs 7, John the Baptist, what would you say that these all had in common? Now, you might come up with some different things, but the one thing I would say is, at least at some point in their life, their clothing said something about them. You think about Adam and Eve when they are in their fig leaves. What does that say? That says, we have sinned. You know, when they're dressed in those, that sent a message. Joseph, the coat of many colors he wore, it sent a very clear message to his brothers. They got it loud and clear. And it created the envy and the resentment. And of course, we remember Tamar. How that she veiled herself in a certain way that made Judah think she was a harlot. There was a woman in Proverbs 17, it said she had the attire of a harlot. I don't know exactly what she was wearing, but it was that which a harlot would wear. When John the Baptist came in his camel's hair, his leather belt, it was a clear identification with Elijah the prophet of old. Clothing has the power to send a message. It always has. My concern is that as disciples, we make certain that our clothing, our dress, sends the proper message. In 1 Timothy, the second chapter, when Paul is writing in verse 9 about modest apparel, he gives some things to be concerned about. I really want to focus on verse 10. He said, but instead of those things, he says, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. If there's that which is proper, it is obvious there's that which is improper. There's that which ought not to be worn. And I want us to think about that. I want us to think about how the true disciples don't send the wrong message with their clothing. And sometimes I run into Christians who say it doesn't matter at all how we dress. If we think that, we're the only people that think that. The world understands that clothing sends a message. You know, business. In business, people expect certain businesses for sure, a professional appearance. Now that may vary from place to place. You know, just talking about with Michael and Kelly about Stuart and his, really, I have to wear a tie? You know, yes, you know, this is an office. This is, you know, we have an appearance to keep up here. And we understand that. I'll tell you, I saw a lot of it yesterday in North Alabama where I live. What you get out in the fall especially, I don't have to ask anybody who they're rooting for that Saturday. I mean, if I go to Walmart, it's covered up. 60% of the people in there have got crimson on. You know, there's 30%. They got orange and blue. And then there's, you know, a few of them that wear, I'm sorry, convict orange. You know, because I mean, we live real close to Tennessee. You know, I mean, and then there's me. You know, I got the other orange and blue on it. You know, but we are... You people
are saying, this is who I'm for today. This is my team. And all of that's okay. But I'll tell you, the world also recognizes there is clothing that sends a sensual message. It's designed to be that way. You can read the descriptions in the fashion magazines. You can read the description the designer himself will label it with. That these things are intended to send a message of physical attractiveness. And that's something that just, a lot of the clothing of today is certainly not intended to draw one's attention to godliness. Well, what should we be concerned about as God's people? We ought to realize that God has called us to be different. We are not to be a people conformed to this world. Romans, the 12th chapter, it is a passage that we've just got to think about regularly. And it requires thought. Let me say this before I even read the verses. God does not call upon us to be weird for the sake of being weird. You know, to be odd. You know, the King James used this expression in 1 Peter 2, a peculiar people. And there have been through the years some people that thought of, well, you know, I know this looks a little bit odd, but God wants us to be a peculiar people. You know, like weird. Now, the word peculiar there had the idea of a unique, special people belonging to God. But you look at Romans 12, verse 1, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. Now, brother, what's he doing? Say, all these things I've said previously about the gospel, about the redemption that's in Christ, the hope that you have, everything builds up to this. With all of that God's grace in your mind, I beseech you that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Do not be conformed. Be transformed. Conformity is easy. Conformity is natural. I don't know if you've noticed, but I speak with what's sometimes referred to as a southern accent. And I want to ask you, do you know how I got this southern accent? I didn't one day decide, you know, I think I would rather have a southern accent than a New England accent or a Midwestern or California. I have a southern accent because I grew up in the South. I had southern parents. You know, I was born right across the line, South Alabama, grew up North Florida. You know, which, by the way, if you don't know anything about Florida, once you get below about Lake City, you're back in the North, you know. But, you know, everything north of Lake City in Florida is in the South. The rest of it's in the North. But I grew up in the South. My accent, it's just what it is, because that's the way everybody talked. We said y'all. We said lots of things, you know. We bless hearts and stuff like that. You know, I could talk like somebody from New England. I could talk like somebody from the Midwest. Do you know what? It would take a lot of thought. I'd have to be so careful of every word I said. Make sure I pronounced it differently. It would take some practice. What he calls on us here is to practice. It's to not just let yourself be conformed to that around you. He says, renew the mind. Renew the mind so that your life is holy. Your life is not that of conformity to the world around you. In the book of 1 Peter, he emphasizes the idea of being holy. 1 Peter 1, verse 13 beginning. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct
because it is written, "Be holy, for I am holy." The word holy,
the idea, sometimes you may have heard people say it means to be set apart. Holy is related to the word sanctification. It is directly related to the word saint. And it really is the idea of being taken from one thing, the world, and set apart to God's special usage. In the Old Testament, they had things that were holy. And at the tabernacle in the temple, there were vessels, gold and silver vessels that were used in the service of God. They were holy in the sense of, when the day was over, the priest didn't take that vessel home and eat out of it. He wouldn't take one of those bowls home with him. No, that was set apart for God's special use. And he says, we're a holy people. I find it interesting here in 1 Peter 1 that in verse 16 he quotes, "Be holy for I am holy." That's a verse, that's a statement found several times in the book of Leviticus. Leviticus, yes, when you read Leviticus, it can seem at times a little tedious with its details on sacrifices, its detailed laws. But to a very great extent, the book of Leviticus was about teaching Israel to be different from the nations around them. He required them to eat different foods. He required them to dress differently, to worship differently, to be a different people. When it comes to how we dress, we have to start off from the idea God's just called us to be different. Now, I'm not going to be different just to be different. I'm going to be different to be holy. Whatever consecration to God requires, that's what I will do. And then, I'm going to give you some, really, three areas that I want to focus on. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on any one of these, but I want you to think about them. How does our dress and our worship reflect? What does it reflect? Hebrews, the 12th chapter, verse 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. I think it is safe to say that as a culture, as a society, we in general just lost the reverence for God. The idea of God as a holy and awesome God. I mean, you read in the Bible pictures of people falling on their face before God, being fearful before God. We've lost that. He said we are to serve God with reverence and godly fear. Somebody said, well, doesn't 1 John say, casting out all fear? Now, we should not be afraid of God. If we are His children, we are assured of His love. We don't have to fear judgment when we live right. But the Bible never teaches us to lose the sense of reverence. That God is not still this great and awesome God. And I look at Hebrews 10. Everybody's familiar with verses 24 and 25 about the forsaking the assembling. Look at the lead into that. It is just incredible. Therefore, brethren, verse 19, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus, He is going to take us to the language of the tabernacle. The tabernacle, when it was set up, as He said, that God might dwell among them. And you had the tabernacle, that structure, it wasn't very big originally, the temple would replace it. The tabernacle was only about 15 feet wide, 45 feet long. The door opened toward the east. I don't know my directions here. I don't know where east is. But it opened to the east. And inside there was the holy place. That place was special. Only the priests and Levites could go in there. And then you walked through the holy place. About 30 feet in, there was a curtain, a veil, about 7.5 feet high. had cherubim woven into it, multicolored. Behind it was the most holy place, the Holy of Holies. And then there was the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was a two-piece item. There was the Ark that contained the Ten Commandments that represented the covenant God made with Israel. But the lid of the Ark, it was the mercy seat. And it had the cherubim. And it was said that God was enthroned above the cherubim. That represented God's dwelling among them. Nobody went in there except the high priest once a year. The tabernacle. You know, just as when God had cast them out of Eden and he put the cherubim with flaming sword to keep them away, you got to think about the same creatures were there woven into that veil. There was not that easy access. But look at what he says we have in Jesus. Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which he consecrated for us through the veil that is his flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. He says we can come through the veil, through Jesus, into the place of God. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. I believe 24 and 25 go right with what he's just saying. That when we come together, we're being allowed to come into the presence of God. And we can come with confidence, he says. And yet, we approach with reverence and godly fear. I don't want to overstate it, but in Exodus, the 19th chapter, when God was going to appear on Mount Sinai, he told the people, get ready. He gave several instructions. One of them, he said, wash your clothes. You know, the one thing I'm not about to do is make laws for God. God hasn't set forth, and here are the items that qualify as church clothes. Not at all. I'm not about to go there. But I am going to tell you, God expects us to be reverent. He expects us to view these things as special occasions. And I want us to just make certain that our clothing never reflects a diminished appreciation for God, for what this means. You know, that at least that this is something special. Make sure we understand that. There's another type of clothing I have concerns about. I just call it message clothing. You know, clothes that have words on them, pictures, various things that can send a message. There's some scriptures that I want you to think about. Ephesians 5, verse 11. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. I want no association with things that are evil. Matthew 5, 14 through 16 is the opposite of that. I want to be a positive influence if I'm a true disciple of Jesus. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. I have a responsibility to not only have no participation in the works of darkness, I'm called on to be a positive influence, to make sure that my light shines. In 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. Now this is a chapter that, you know, y'all may have noticed this, but 2 Corinthians comes after 1 Corinthians. You know, that's an astute observation, isn't it? But 1 Corinthians 16, Paul talks about the collection for the saints. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 follows that. It's the follow-up. They said, yeah, sure, we'll do this. We're going to have all this for you. And evidently they weren't doing it. And so he writes to
exhort them to give. And he's giving some statements about it. There are some men coming with Paul. They're going to, he says, they're messengers of the churches. And he explains why these men are with him, why these men will be traveling with the money. Verse 20, avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Do you get what he's saying? He says, I care about the appearance. He said, I'm not taking, you know, putting all this money in my bag and taking it to Jerusalem. Because that wouldn't look good. I want it to not just look good before God. Sometimes I hear people say, well, God knows what I'm thinking. And God does. But Paul said, I care about what others think. I don't want to put somebody to say, well, you know, Paul took an awful lot of money to Jerusalem. I'm not sure all of it made it there. Well, he didn't have to worry about that because he had others with him. And we need to make sure that we think along that line. I don't want to wear anything that would imply some endorsement of evil, that would send the wrong message to anybody. There are things I put in kind of the fuzzy, the gray area. You know, just maybe it's a simple illustration. Now, I would never, ever buy one of these NFL jerseys. They cost too much money. You know, and I'm not that passionate an NFL fan anyway. But, you know, a few years ago, there was a period of time, a few weeks, where the number one selling NFL jersey was a St. Louis Rams jersey with the name Sam on the back. Michael Sam. Why were people buying that? Because he was openly gay. It was, you know, people buying that jersey to give their statement of support, appreciation for immorality. Now, I think it's pretty clear. Christian had no business being a part of that. Then on the other hand, what if you were a New England Patriots fan? I know that's after last Super Bowl, that's a bad one to bring up, but there's a great illustration in that. Other than Tom Brady, who's their best player? It's Gronk. Rob Gronkowski is an incredible tight end. When he's healthy, he is almost an unstoppable force. He also a pretty wild character. He's known for his parties. He's known for his lifestyle that's immoral. If a Patriots fan is wearing a Gronk jersey, is that, that's not, the Michael Sam had one purpose, one purpose only. It wasn't to celebrate what a great defensive tackle or end he was, because he didn't even make the team in the end. You know, with Gronk, he's the best tight end in football. But he's also, that was one of those, see, I would say, I would leave it off. I wouldn't do it because does somebody look at it and say, oh, he likes Gronkowski, you know, that lifestyle? No, not by any means. You know, there are schools that I absolutely wouldn't wear in the college realm. I couldn't wear a Brigham Young, anything with that on it, because it is so associated with the Mormon church. In the same way with Notre Dame. I mean, I know there are people that root for that that have no connection to Catholicism. But see, I'd be glad to talk about this with somebody that would question, but I find Catholicism to be in error. I don't want to endorse that. But then again, what about Duke? Georgetown. You know, Georgetown is also happens to be a Catholic school. But how many people think of that? You know, they think of those Hoyas and what great basketball teams they had for a time under John Thompson.
Do you see what I'm saying about a gray area? That I have to make my decision. And I'm going to allow others to make their decision on something like that. They have to figure it out. There was a time when I would do this lesson, and I've done this a few times. It always is a little bit different, but I would talk about clothing that featured what was sometimes people call the Confederate battle flag, the stars and bars. And I will tell you this, there was a time I was a lot more of the gray area. I'm still not going to make laws for God, but I encourage people to take the approach I took with my children a long time ago. There are just too many people that find that to be offensive, that find that to be troublesome. You may have a completely different view of the whole affair than other people do, but what you want is your influence to be good. You want your influence to be positive. That's not something I have to wear. That's not something anybody has to wear. Why choose something? And you can find other illustrations. But there are some things, you know, getting into there very clearly. I had a lady tell me one time, said, "You just wouldn't believe this. Sunday morning, a guy got up, he was waiting on the table, helping the Lord's Supper. And he had a shirt on, it had dice and cards, and I may have had cigarettes, and she said, I know she said it had alcohol." She said, "He was up there waiting on the table." I thought, if he was at Walmart, it would have been just as bad. A Christian doesn't wear something that endorses those kinds of behaviors. There are some, you know, there's, I don't know if you can call them restaurants. I know they serve wings and some other stuff, but they are very clearly lewd, lustful kind of place. A Christian wear a shirt from one of those? No. What I'm saying is, folks, what we wear does send a message. Let's make sure the message is not an endorsement of sin. It's not an endorsement, or it's something that in any way would dim our light. My call, your call, is to lead others to Christ. You know, I don't have to wear anything that would diminish that. And I ought not. Another area, and maybe the one, you know, when I first announced the lesson, everybody immediately runs to, is the sensuality. Clothing can be sensual, sexual in its nature. I think it is important that as Christians we realize that in the 60s a war was fought. And I'm not talking about the one in Southeast Asia. There was a war called the Sexual Revolution. And you know what lost? Morality and decency. Our country has never been a Christian nation, as some mistakenly think. But there was a time when certain aspects of morality and decency were more highly regarded. But morality is lost. And our fashion industry they don't have a biblical approach in anything. Hebrews 13:4 says, "Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge." You know, those who produce our movies and our television shows and those who make our clothes, they are not the least bit concerned about people living together apart from marriage. And the clothes reflect that. I mean, you want to get a joke, you know, get people to laugh? Make some little comment about lust. Lust in the heart, you know, maybe it goes all the way back to 1976 and Jimmy Carter. You know, that's just become the fodder of jokes. God's not laughing about it. Look at Matthew 5 and verse 27. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Sexual desire for one, not your spouse, God condemns. Increasingly, I run across people saying, "Yeah, I look at that, you're right.
But it doesn't say a thing about how the woman is dressed. I think there's a valid point to be made there. That you and I are responsible for what we think. And nobody else can force us to do wrong. But when somebody says that, and it's usually said in defense of wearing clothing that is lewd, I want to ask him, have you kept reading? In Matthew the 18th chapter and verse 6, he says, "But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes." To cause others to sin in any way is a serious matter. Do we seriously think that we cannot dress in such a way as to incite unlawful passions? If we think that way, then we're probably the only people that think that way. The folks that design clothes think they can do that. The folks that write the fashion reviews, you know, for the Emmys and the Grammys and all of these red carpet type events, oh, they certainly read the adjectives they use to describe the clothing. So, the godliness is just not a concern. Some years ago, I came up with 5 questions that I like for people to consider. And along this line, is your clothing too low? Is it showing too much there? Is it too tight? You know, you can have everything covered, but covered in such a way as really to draw attention. Is it too short? Is it too brief? Like Adam and Eve. You know, Adam had on his apron, his whatever it was, the fig leaves. And when God came, he said he hid himself. He said, because I was naked. You know, I just wonder, what was he wearing? Was it too sheer? That's another one. You know, these are questions. Yes, you won't find those exact questions in Scripture. But those are things I think that reflect along lines of sensuality. And my philosophy on this, and I think the safe philosophy is, when in doubt, throw it out. I illustrate with leftovers. You know how it is. You know when you finish the meal, if there's some left, you can't throw it away. That would be wrong. You put it in the refrigerator for 3 or 4 days, then you throw it out. You know, it's no, seriously. I mean, we eat leftovers, but every now and then something it gets pushed behind something. And then you get it out, and you can't remember for sure just how long it's been in there. And what happens? Janet goes, "Does this smell funny to you?" Like, no, come on now. You know, it's one of those, I have kind of a paranoia about food poisoning. If we're not going to settle on whether we're going to eat this or not based on, well, to me it smells funny, but if you think it's okay, nah. One vote's enough. You know, if we have any doubt, you know, it's gone. It is in the garbage. Well, if you're asking yourself, you look in the mirror and you say, I wonder if this is a little too short. It probably is. You know, you go to ask somebody, you think this is too tight? Yeah, it probably is. Think about that. Let me quickly give you 3 objections that people make sometimes to the things I've said. Somebody says, well, I don't think it really matters how we dress because God looks at the heart. Look at 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter, in verse 7. Here's a statement is made. The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance. Samuel is at the house of Jesse to anoint the next king. And the first one has come in, and Samuel just said, that looks like a king. The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as a man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Is that one of those absolute statements? The Lord doesn't look at outward appearance at all? You know, people look at outward appearance.
God doesn't judge somebody by their height, their weight, the color of their skin, the color of their hair, you know, these kinds of things that so often folks look at. You know, and I mean, and you know, we automatically sometimes think about how people judge on the basis of skin color. I don't know. I think this still holds true. But I know a couple of presidential elections ago, I read that every election since TV was developed, the taller candidate won every single time. You know, Americans always voted for the taller of the two candidates. Now, in Alabama, we just failed to choose Big Luther, who was about, he's about 6'10 or something like that. You know, we went against that for the one. But I won a presidential election. I mean, you know, people are all about sometimes physical appearance. That's not God. You know, God might look at us and say, y'all should have chosen that shorter guy a few times. You know, but is that what he's saying? That God doesn't look at anything about the outward appearance? The truth is, God's always regulated certain outward actions. When God said this to Samuel, they were living under the law of Moses, in which he told them foods they could eat and couldn't eat. He told them how to handle dead bodies. He told them that in the corner of their garments, they had to put a tassel with a blue thread in it. God cared about whether that blue thread was there. The truth is, God does look at the heart, and it is the heart that regulates what we wear. Matthew, the 15th chapter. This is a very important principle. The context is about eating foods with the hands unwashed. And he says, Jesus said, that kind of washing is not that important. But he said, those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. It's not that God doesn't care about the actual act of murder or fornication or blasphemy. But what he does say is it comes out of the heart. And it's not, of course, this thing pumping blood. The Bible heart is the mind. When it comes to the way we dress, if we have a heart that's committed to reverence, if we have a heart that is committed to love for others, a heart that's committed to purity, to holiness, it will reflect itself in the way we dress. On the other hand, if we don't have a heart of reverence, of concern for others, a heart of purity, that's going to work its way out into our dress too. Think about that. A question somebody asked one time, I like easy questions. Sometimes somebody will preach something like this, so I say, well, who gave you the right to make the rules? I like easy ones because, you know, nobody gave me the right to make the rules. I understand that. James 4, verse 12, there is one lawgiver, and it's not me. And I understand that. I don't want to be guilty. I'm not up here today telling you this is the dress code. I'm asking you to consider some biblical principles. I know this. God gave some laws about reverence. He gave some laws about holiness. He gave me a directive about letting my light shine before others, about trying to bring others to God. He gave me instructions about holiness and purity. The reality is not my place to draw the line, but I know the line exists. There is a line I cross where that's too low, that's too tight. You know, that's irreverent. That's not showing respect for others. What concerns me, and it's a deep concern of mine, is that a lot of times I think people want me to say, okay, here is the exact line, and so I can get, and I'm going to get right there. I want to be as close to that line as I can. Well, I think if I knew exactly where the line is, that's a bad attitude. But when we are talking about something that maybe the line is not as easy to draw, it's a really bad attitude. I've illustrated sometimes this way. Janet's from West Virginia. She's from the mountains. she's not really particularly fond of heights. She loves the mountains, but you know, we get up in the mountains somewhere. You know, I'm that guy. I want to go over and I want to look. Whoo, look down here. And she's like, are you crazy? You know, and when the kids were small, it was, she didn't like sometimes where I wanted to take the kids to see sometimes. I've said, if you ever find her at the bottom of the hill, she was pushed. You know, I mean, there is no doubt. Well, you know, I like to get to the edge, but there sometimes I get to a place where it's not a well-defined rock edge. There's a edge, you can tell it's, you know what, even then, as much as I love to look over, I stay back. When I don't know for sure at what point that thing's going to crumble and give way with me, I was about to say, I'm not stupid. Well, sometimes I am, but on that one, I'm not crazy. I back up. You know, when it comes to dress, and you apply that across the board with the worship, with the messages, with the purity, be safe. Make sure you give yourself a little room that edge doesn't give way on you. A third objection sometimes says, particularly when we're talking about the purity, is somebody say, well, I can't help that some people have dirty minds. Well, ain't that the truth? 2 Peter, the second chapter, talks about some people whose eyes were full of adultery. There are people who are guilty of the most vile thoughts. They don't have to have help from anybody, anybody's poor dress. But I would remind you what Paul said in 2 Timothy 8. Paul didn't say, you know, I can't help the fact that there are probably going to be some people that are going to think bad of me. You know, they're going to say he was doing this for some selfish reason. No, he took every precaution he could. He did what he could. And I think we have to do that. And I know there are going to be some people who stare, who lust. But I also need to do my part, that I not be the cause of someone stumbling. To have a millstone tied around your neck and be cast into the depth of the sea, that's pretty serious business. Paul said it'd be better, Jesus said it would be better to have that done to you than to cause somebody to stumble. We're out of time. I want to say real quickly in conclusion, you may differ with some of my conclusions, the applications I would make in my life, but let's not deny the fact that clothes say something about us. And as disciples of Christ who want our lights to shine, who want to be people who are not a cause of stumbling, but a source of building up, we want to make sure they say the right things. The Lord calls us to holiness. And I want you to turn to 1 Peter 1 with me. In that passage where he speaks about being holy, he also says in verse 18, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. The call to holiness is not always easy. But you think about what he's done for us. The call to holiness is made by the one who redeemed us with his precious blood. There's a reason we started this meeting off with the cross of Jesus Christ. I hope this has been helpful to you. Think on these things, and I guess we just stand adjourned for a few moments here. All right.